Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rog Baines, how you doing, mate?
I'm not too bad. Yourself? This is an odd one, isn't it?
I know, right? This is what a global pandemic can do, mate. Bring back the podcast after what, three, four years?
It's not been that long, surely.
No, I don't think so. But time means nothing at the moment, anyway, does it?
Genuinely, I couldn't tell you what day of the week it is.
It is Friday. I know that much purely because I worked all weekend as well, so I'm sort of at the end of a long stretch. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And looking forward to just getting a bit pissed tonight. Although I haven't been drinking that much, actually. That's one of the things of lockdown. Yeah, I know. It can go either way, right? But I've sort of stayed away from the devil's water as best I can.
Shall I tell you what I did? I spent the first month of it kind of as I'm wont to do, kind of drinking and eating my feelings, and I kind of treat it as like an extended Christmas period. Do you know what I mean? Like the cheeses were out every night, there was drinking going on, you know, watching telly, just kind of like, oh, we're all at home, like sort of that kind of a thing. And then, you know, when I stepped on the scales at the end of the month and kind of felt awful, I was like, oh shit, that's what happens when you do this to yourself for a month. So I've been a bit more monk-like and stuff this month. I'm still going out for my walks and everything, but, you know, just running and cycling and trying to watch what I eat and little things like that now, because, you know, I've got a wedding to trim down for. I couldn't turn up 3 stone heavier than I was before the fucking lockdown. Yeah. Back
like an inverse kind of wedding diet.
But, it was weirdly just bulking for the first month, just, you know, fuck it, let's have a biscuit tonight, or let's bake a cake or something like that, just to try and make yourself feel better. And then by the end of it, you realise that it wasn't the, you know, the week you allow yourself at Christmas was actually 4 weeks of April.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, you know, I think the start of it, there was a lot of confusion and everything for everybody, wasn't there? And it was sort of one of those periods of just like, you know what, I'm just sort of going to focus on try to wrap my head around what's going on in the world versus really giving a shit about diet and stuff like that at this point in time. But in saying that, like, I've sort of come out the other side of it in the respect that, like, now I am actually finding that, like, doing, like, my daily sort of routine and everything like that in terms of exercise-wise, Christ, is this, are we becoming, like, one of these protein podcasts or something?
Yeah, this is the British Joe Rogan podcast, isn't it?
But
we've rebranded now.
I'm sort of finding that it helps a bit to sort of just keep me a bit sane, to be honest, which is sort of hard to do at the best of times.
Oh, yeah, I was a student again that first month, because I was sort of watching telly late at night. I've watched more TV and Netflix in the past, like, month and a half than I have for 2-3 years, probably since we last did the podcast properly.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've caught up on so many things that I'd not seen. I'd not seen the latest season of Stranger Things, which I really enjoyed, and I'm glad I've caught up on. I finally finished Suits, which is one of the greatest pieces of fluff television ever invented. there's all sorts of stuff that I'd sort of just life had got in the way of, and now it's almost as if, Jack, to be slightly personal for a second, as you know, it's almost as if, like, this lockdown has put me back in the same position I was in before we, you know, the last time we did the podcast regularly, that period in my life. It feels as if I've been dragged back to that position, which is probably why we're recording now, because I've got fuck all better to do. on a Friday afternoon.
It's like a sort of augmented reality Facebook on this day sort of thing.
Yeah, really is. Only now when I've sort of played FIFA until 4 a.m. and then woke up at 2 p.m, I've got a fiance on the phone going, why the fuck haven't you texted me yet and what have you been up to all night? And I'm kind of like, oh yeah, I've forgotten about you momentarily. I have moved on in my life.
I don't think we've actually potted since that pretty major life announcements happened, mate. This is a perfect forum to talk about one's loved ones and personal life.
Have you got married and I've got engaged since the last time we did a podcast?
Yeah. Exactly that.
So I think that's probably just about, if anyone's ever needs a question as to why we don't do it as often anymore, I think the fact that we're now, you know, fully functioning grown men to an extent, I don't want to run before we can walk.
Let's not push it too far. But
we're very much being carried by the women in our lives, but the fact that we've actually got other commitments and responsibilities and things to be getting on with is probably explanation enough.
Yeah, I mean, fuck them. They still come back, don't they? The pigs, for our content. We deal them out this swill, and they come back.
I thought you were on about our missus then, not listening. I thought you were going to say they've turned the weans against us.
Yeah. Anyone know a good divorce lawyer at all?
Yeah, Jesus.
But so we're back in the fold.
I think momentarily.
Temporarily. Yeah, little taste after doing the Amsterdam pod the other day. I was actually, do you know what? I was so absolutely chuffed, and it was so bizarre. Like I was sort of trying to convey as I was recording my bizarre rambling little monologues between each section.
You know what that reminded me of? Have you ever seen like a crooner? And then they do like, have you ever listened to one on like a Dean Martin CD?
Me down at the winter of 58. I was in a nice little chalet, and there was a pretty little thing who was looking at me from across the bar. Yeah.
And then they do that really cheesy thing like where this. They mention the song name in their story.
Yeah, and then you just hear the double bass, ba-dum, ba-dum, bum, bum, sort of.
And I thought to myself, that's Amore. Take it away, boys.
I don't think I pulled it off with quite that much grace. There's a lot more flatulence on my part as well.
We've always been the rat pack of the Tottenham podcasting fraternity.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Definitely. That's one way we can put it, isn't it? I like that. When I was uploading that podcast, actually, in particular, going through some of the old titles as well, fucking Chairgate.
The first time you uploaded it, or the second time when I interrupted you?
Yeah, well, yeah. But, I mean, that's what I was saying. Yeah, at the top of this, I was absolutely chuffed you actually did, because I genuinely meant that sincerely. I was like, I'm glad I'm getting this out, but you know, it'd be nice to have that little rad shaped cherry on top. And that sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it? But you know, we'll go with it. We'll run with it. And you got it there. And I liked how you messaged me immediately afterwards, being like, I hope that wasn't too miserable. It was like, no, perfect, like spot on. You know, but. Did you actually find it cathartic doing that in any way?
I did, yeah, because we've not spoken about it. You did mention that we've recorded and failed 2 podcasts in the meantime, and this might be a hat trick. We're not yet sure because we've not finished recording it.
So I did the fucking voice notes. I was like, this is going to be the easiest way to do it, like with everyone.
Well, it's just been painful. It really has. I've never felt like this kind of disconnect from Spurs before, even during the Tim Sherwood period. I wasn't disconnected from the club. I actively hated us. Like, and I don't even have active hate anymore. They're just kind of there. And obviously I still care. And obviously I still look out and watch as many games as I possibly can. But you know, it's one of those things. Like, I used to shape my life around Spurs. If there was a game on an evening and it didn't look like I could watch it, I would move heaven and earth to be able to watch it in some way. Like, people would feel put out by me because I was putting Spurs ahead of them. And I just don't do that anymore because I just don't have the heart to. And if I miss a game, you know, I've still got Sky and BT and all that sort of shit, but if I miss a game, I don't care. I get the alerts through if we scored, which we more often than not don't. And you know, I kind of almost, you know, when a shit result comes through this season, there's almost a sense of relief that I haven't dedicated my time to being disappointed and heartbroken by him.
See, I've been thinking about this as well, because I feel pretty much exactly the same and have done this season. And do you think it's an intersection though of like, because there is that part of me that thinks, oh yeah, what fucking shit fan, you're just kind of feeling that way because Spurs haven't been that good this year. But when I've looked into it further, I'm like, no, not really, because most of my life Spurs have been absolutely shite and I haven't really cared, to be honest. I've just enjoyed watching Spurs. But I wonder, like, I am starting to wonder if it's like, because obviously there's one of the main pieces is life and just getting to a stage in life and sort of growing up to a degree where perhaps things like football are less raw emotionally. It's still there, don't get me wrong, but it's not quite the same as when you were growing up and it meant like everything. But at this point, like, it is undeniable that, you know, there's a lot of heartbreak involved with not only that Champions League result, but Pochettino going afterwards. But is it just that, like, and this is kind of where I keep landing at the moment, is football just a bit shit now? Has it just kind of, has it had its Rubicon moment where we sort of look at it as a sport, as an industry, and I just sort of see it as so oversaturated with just like greed and self-interest and just kind of, I know we sort of said we didn't want to go into it too much, but like one of the overriding things I felt during the whole lockdown thing is like football's inability as a kind of institution. And I don't really mean this towards the players. I mean it more towards like the governing bodies and the suits, essentially, the machine behind the sport. How it's had this sort of like, sort of actually quite repulsive, like squealing level of entitlement, as in like, pay attention to us. You know, it's so used to being in the limelight and it's so used to everything revolving around it that it suddenly hasn't been able to take it at all, to be able to stand it, that like, yeah, you're going to miss out on money, but who the fuck else isn't? Like, what every single industry, every single person, pretty much, nearly every single individual is missing out on money. Like, why the fuck do you think you're so special at the moment? And everything around it, like Troy Deeney's come out today to speak about it on the day of recording anyway, just saying like, you know, if it's not safe for fans to go into a stadium, why is it safe for me to go into a stadium and put my family at risk? And, it's the whole thing's just quite off. And COVID is obviously, it's the sort of the ugly face of football at the moment in many respects. I mean, there's lots of good stories coming out of it, blah, blah, blah. But let's focus on the negative for a second. But even before that point, like, we, you know, sort of like when we've chatted anecdotally, like between each other on WhatsApp and stuff like that, when you're just like super leagues and, you know, the financial doping all over the shop and kind of like how Spurs are now just this like branded entity that just seems, even as a club, so removed from what I knew. And you're kind of trying to find that balance between how much you can criticise the powers that be that run the club and how much you kind of feel, well, they're just playing along with the rules of the game now. Like, this is kind of what the sport is, that if you want to sink or swim, it's kind of, I don't know, I'm not really old enough to remember it. I'd be interested to know kind of how people who are old enough to remember the inception of the Premier League felt as that came in, because that's probably the last seismic shift in kind of football in the country. And, it would be,
which was something, again, Spurs were a major spearhead in bringing along, because
we were, weren't we?
Our sort of involvement in modern day football isn't the greatest. Shall I let you behind the curtain of how different the podcast recording is now for me than it was before? You know, before I used to like, I was a young, bright man that used to be able to like play FIFA and kind of half listen to you and then, you know, just spew out something in response to you afterwards, or I'd be, you know, texting or whatever in the background.
Yeah.
I've actually now, because you were talking, I've started making notes of what you've said and what I need to reply to, because I know
I'm going
to
forget. Have you got your reading glasses on as well?
I fucking have, mate. It's a bit mad, this. Anyway, going back to my notes to try and build on what you've said. If I take up the COVID stuff first, I think the bit for me that we're kind of going sort of beyond the pale were, you know, when they were talking about we'll buy all the private tests so the players can get tested twice or three times a week before a game, after a game, all this time. And you've got frontline service staff that can't get it themselves. And, you know, they're so scarce and expensive and all that sort of stuff that they're putting the importance of a folly, essentially. I understand the money behind it and the business behind it isn't a joke because it's so big and so many clubs rely on it. And, you know, the only slightly persuasive argument that they do have in their arsenal is that so many clubs within the football pyramid and amateur rely on the money to trickle down from the Premier League. But even then, it kind of felt like it was a tertiary positive for them. It was almost their own pockets they expected to line first, and then whatever trickled down from them was kind of a bonus that they could use as a positive, and that felt really off to me. It's almost as if you've got that much spare cash to be buying up this amount of bulk tests for people, fucking donate them to frontline service staff that actually
it's farcical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that kind of self-importance was really galling and something that football's own sort of, sort of ability to look at their own self-image and sort of see the way they're coming across is so sort of blind and sort of ignorant to themselves. And I think because they've got so many people blowing smoke up their arse and they are full of such self-importance and are in many ways too big to fail, it's not something you could really rally against. But the other thing you were saying in terms of sort of how we feel in comparison to that, especially during this period. I told you before, I've not missed Spurs once during this period. You know, you see tweets every day of people going, oh, I wish the football were on, or looking forward to German League coming back, or people watching Belarusian football and try to bet on that. Like, it hasn't been a concern for me once. I don't feel like I've missed Spurs. The only time I've actively thought about Tottenham during this period is when we weren't paying our staff enough money, and I felt the need to tweet and say
it was embarrassing, though, wasn't it?
Can you? Yeah, it really was. I was like, look, you've shot yourselves in a sporting sense enough this year. Can you not do it in a business one? Can you not make yourselves repugnant people, please? Can you? You have the money, we have the profits to pay these people what they're worth and what they deserve. Can you actually just do the human, decent thing for once? The whole sort of missing it is twofold for me. It's almost the thing I've come up with now on the fly is, you know how older people with kids talk about Christmas? And I think that's kind of how I look at Spurs now. It was growing up, and while we still believed in Santa and sort of, I hope nobody's listening around their kids now, because I really don't want to be the one to ruin that for them, because that's a shit. But you know, when you have that belief and you have that sort of innocence around it, I think we've almost crossed over now to the point where we don't have that anymore, and it's almost lost its special, I don't know, draw over
us. I think that's kind of what the Champions League run touched on quite a lot. You know,
well, I was about to say, we don't have the investment, because if you look at the people that do currently have that, it's the Liverpool fans and the Leeds fans and even the City fans, the people who have something to either hate or actively want back, then, you know, it's different. I mean, it is an entirely biased and sort of club-specific thing, because it's such a tribal sport and everything. If we were if this were last season and this happened after the Ajax game or something like that, and we were in the build-up to Champions League final and people were saying, scrap the season, and we were like, we're never going to get to play in our own Champions League final, we would obviously be doing, oh, fucking yeah, use your tests, do whatever you want. Like, if Harry Kane needs a test at half-time, fuck the nurses, give him one. But it's different, isn't it? And, you know, it's the whole thing you touched on about us being a brand rather than a club, I think that's spot on. I mean, we do less in terms of fan engagement now, and I know that's kind of lip service at its best anyway, but there's less of that togetherness, and we are just we're a vehicle for an Amazon documentary. We're, you know, we're more Joe Exotic than we are a fucking club, if you know what I mean. It's sort of...
It's bizarre. No, I know what you mean. In the interest of balance, the only thing I would say is, whether it's PR or not, there is a massive net good to what the club's been doing with the neonatal kind of clinic.
Oh, yeah, the fact that we've turned it into a stadium
at the moment.
Yeah,
which, I don't know, I heard on a podcast I read somewhere, I can't even remember now, like, you know, how do you find this as well? You just get information from so many different sources nowadays. I'm always like, where the fuck did I hear or see or read that? Yeah. Or have I just made it up?
Yeah.
I don't really know what is true anymore.
Is that's it believable? Probably,
that's a deeper point. Yeah, exactly. Like, but somebody raised a very good point that now, as a result of this, we could in 20, 30 years' time potentially have the first player who was born literally at a stadium playing in that stadium. Potentially.
Yeah, that is a nice thought. I mean, while we're giving the club a shoe-in, the one thing that they have to be fair to them, and I think they didn't really have a choice in the matter, I think it was kind of a part of the deal, whichever the way they wanted to cut it, was that they are brilliant for the community in whatever way they can be. I mean, there's arguments against that with how many businesses and things they put out of, you know, whack and stuff while they're building a new stadium and all the housing and stuff, but they do appear to do as much as they can do for the community in a sort of a charitable and sort of, you know, just purely sort of voluntary sense, and in a way that they maybe wouldn't have to or you know, could get away with not doing. But that's one that's sort of a tertiary point.
No, yeah, but I know what you mean. It's like, you know, I think as much as there is this temptation to kind of go down these rabbit holes of, you know, sort of, because I think we're both of that sort of, like, you know, if anyone listening wasn't aware thus far, we're both sort of that, like, pinko lefty sort of persuasion.
I've got BNP, mate. I don't know what you're on about.
Yeah. There is that temptation to sort of run with that whole, like, you know, everything that represents some form of capitalism is completely and utterly reprehensible, which, you know, it generally is for the most part, I say, as I record this on my Apple Mac.
As we both do.
Yeah. But, you know, I think one of my more, I don't even know what it is, just sort of a position I've managed to settle on to, I guess, find some semblance of peace in my head as I get older, is that there can still be net good out the back of this stuff. And whether it is, you know, and my younger self is screaming at me being like, it's a cynical PR ploy.
Oh, yeah, I'm still thinking that as we're doing it.
Potentially it is, but, yeah, but, you know,
it's sports like washing on a smaller scale.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, whatever, I know I'm not going to change the world.
Well, if you think that way, you won't, but fuck off.
Like, I'm arguing myself now already, but...
Oh, man, you know, we've talked about that internal battle that we go through every day between fucking picking up a wage and wanting to break the system. It comes to that point where you kind of give up and the idealism gets beaten out of you.
Yeah. It's the last paragraph of 1984, isn't it? When he realizes the bullets in his brain, and he takes that shot of gin and realizes that ultimately he just loves Big Brother. He submits to the machine.
Yep.
And that's it. A gin-soaked tear trickles down his cheek.
I really hope anyone who's like sort of struggling with like their mental health during the lockdown and stuff hasn't turned to this podcast for a fucking pick me up or something.
Yeah.
We're the wrong people to deliver that. We embrace our misery, and I think that's why we're happier people for it.
Probably, yeah. I think there was John Ronson went on Louis Theroux's podcast the other day, actually, and was talking about how there's been some tentative studies into people who actually are anxious or suffer from anxiety disorders in peacetime, if you like, they actually are starting to speculate or believe that they cope better in crisis because it's almost like they're prepared for it. I don't know. I'm waffling off sort of secondhand facts here. So
yes, no, mate.
Take from that what you want. Yeah. Sort of around this subject, though.
This is a football podcast. Let's remember. Sort of,
well,
that's never been our thing. In terms of like,
no. I mean, why bother? Why
yeah, change,
why change
the habit?
This
of
is still.
Yeah.
It's still a motive, though, and it's still about misery, and it's still about kind of a duality to everything, a kind of, you know, a sort of a double looking at something like Pochettino.
Yeah.
And as much as I'm pretty sure, you know, I think we all knew that he wanted out by the end of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, because this is always the argument, right? If you talk about Pochettino, how much you miss him and how silly it was that we sacked him. I mean, like, it still seems so bizarre to me that Tottenham Hotspur sacked Maurizio Pochettino. Like, it just seems insane. But, like, when you look at it through, like, a lens with no nuance like that, it is going to. But it is important to remember that by the end, he very clearly wanted out. Like, there was a very toxic situation at the club that wasn't getting any better. I mean, I think for me, the sort of the nadir was Brighton. You know, that Brighton game, it actually genuinely looked like the players were like, this is it now, it's done. And he looked done. And the whole thing, just the wheels were off completely.
It was essentially a dirty protest on a grand scale.
Yeah, I mean, when even like Harry Kane was looking like he didn't give a shit anymore, that's when he started to sort of worry a bit, you know?
It was our own version of Marriage Story, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was. And I don't know, the thing that got me, though, was seeing him do that interview with BT Sports. I mean, yeah, you know, there is all the, you know, a lot of it is wrapped up in the joy of Amsterdam and everything like that, because they, you know, I think the interview came out the back of that. But you can genuinely see that the man really did have a very strong connection to the club, to the fans, and still does. You know, they were interviewing him, and halfway through the interview, he kept losing sight of it. He kept forgetting. He kept talking about my players, my club, this type of thing, and then almost catching himself and being like, Tottenham's players, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we both know that losing somebody like him that you could kind of rally behind, get behind a project or whatever you want to call it, losing that and sort of the thought of, I mean, Mourinho, I don't really want to lose too much sleep over it. You know, a lot of people have kicked off about it. And if I'm being brutally honest, I don't like the bloke. I've never particularly liked him, but I understand it. I understand from the mentality of somebody like Daniel Levy, why you'd bring somebody like Mourinho in. You know, we are a huge global brand. This isn't to say I endorse it or like it, but we're a huge global brand. We've just lost a Champions League final. It looks like at the moment we're on course to finish mid-table or whatever. And we've got a load of very good players still who are playing miles beneath themselves.
Yes.
We don't really have the money at the moment out the back of a stadium build to refinance an entire purchasing of a new first team.
And post-COVID we won't.
So why not? Yeah, so getting in a manager like Mourinho, who is box office, whatever you want to say about him, has the potential there to galvanise the sort of dying embers of the Pochettino project and maybe just deliver an FA Cup, a Europa League, something like that out the back of it. I totally understand it. I'm not... Yeah, I think people are getting very sort of wound up about it, but I also, completely speaking from the outside, I can't imagine the appetite was there amongst even players like Kane to take on a Nagelsmann or someone like that at that point, after they've just had Pochettino, to take on a new project manager, a new sort of, you know, lease of life, a new kind of roadmap of 5 years. It's just not gonna, it's not gonna take at the moment, in my opinion. So I can see why you bring in Mourinho, 2-3 years, whatever. Players like Kane, Alderweireld, think, well, fuck it, yeah, you know, I can get myself up for 2-3 years of making a fist at winning something at Spurs again, and then we try, and if it doesn't work, it's, that's kind of, you know, it feels like a bit of a free hit in a way, and a very expensive free hit. But, you know, I see the next sort of manager. Yeah, maybe Wagner, he's sort of pulling up trees again at Schalke now. Yeah. Know, maybe somebody like him comes in after Mourinho.
Although we won't want to be kind of seen as a Poundland Klopp project, would we? I'm not sure. But he is fantastic, David, and he's, you know, I'd love him at Spurs, but that's a conversation for another day. Speaking about that change from Poch to Mourinho, I think the way that the Pochettino thing ended, is the reason for why we feel the way we feel. I think had we lost the Champions League final, and there was a sense of continuity, or there was a sense that we could go again, then maybe I think we would be back, and I think we would have that same level of enthusiasm and investment. But I think our attitude kind of reflects where that ending left us. I remember the night he got sacked, you knew it was coming, but it still felt shit, and I was just really quiet, and it was like something. Because at the end of the day, it is football, and somebody just, managers come and go all the time, but it was like something more serious had happened. I don't want to draw a parallel to something more serious happening, especially like at this period of time in the world, but that's kind of...
Yeah, I think people will give you a bit of leeway, though.
That's kind of how you behaved at the time, wasn't it? It was like you'd lost something a bit bigger than it was, but... And there was a real sense of injustice. It felt as if we'd done wrong by him. And I think in many ways we had, but it almost felt as if, and it felt this way throughout his entire tenure, to be honest, that he was just so good at what he was doing, and we were always a season or two ahead on the field of where we were off it. And like you say, the money from the stadium hadn't come through. We'd been pumping all that in. He'd taken us into the new ground, but that had taken so much resource that, you know, we didn't have what we might have later on to reinvest into the football inside of the operation. And it kind of, he was a victim of his own success, definitely. There's no chance anybody else would have ever taken us to a Champions League final, especially under those circumstances, a short amount of time. And it, just trying to keep to that level is what cost us, you know, especially his way of playing, the emotional and physical investment that he got out of all of his players. You know, I think 3 seasons under Pochettino.
It broke him, mate. You could see how visceral it was after that Amsterdam game.
Yeah.
You know?
I think 3 seasons under Pochettino is probably 5 seasons under somebody else. And I think not even just physically, I think physically they're such prime athletes that, you know, a summer off, they can be ready to play again, but mentally being able to pick themselves up and want to do it and have the drive to do it again. You know, we've been talking a lot about The Last Dance and stuff, the Bulls and everything like that. And
yeah,
the fact that even somebody like Michael Jordan, after winning 3 straight championships twice, just went, look, I'm mentally, I'm exhausted. And, you know, there's been about 8 hours worth of stories of how competitive and how driven that man was to win. And even when he got to that level of winning, it was like, nah, I really need a fucking break now. I want to go play golf and bet and, you know, smoke cigars. We got to that point. We didn't cross the line of actually winning, but we got to such a high point, and we'd built ourselves up emotionally to such a point as both a squad, a coaching staff and a fan base, that it was the end of the road. No matter win or loss, I think that was the end of the road. Had we even won the Champions League final, I think he would have probably walked away. Because he sort of alluded to that, didn't he? Because I think he would have taken the Jordan route. He would have gone to go play baseball or something. But he stayed because I think he felt a sense of duty, and I think he might have hoped more than believed that he was going to get what he needed to completely overhaul the squad, because we'd drained it of all life by that point. There were so many players that needed to a fresh start, or just had come to the end of their story with Spurs. And I kind of, we look at them as a resource, as fans, or as, I don't know, we kind of dehumanise footballers in a way that, as I get older, that I'm kind of trying to rally against now. Especially I'm trying to think of, like, you know, Christian Eriksen and stuff. We think of him more as an icon on Football Manager, or somebody we play with on FIFA, just as a plaything and an asset, rather than, you know, a man with his own wife and kids and wants and hopes and feelings and aspirations. And we forget that he'd invested all that time and he'd been on the same journey that we have. And if we're feeling this way, you know, if it was an acceptable thing to change your football club as a supporter, I think after that Champions League final, most of us probably would have gone, oh, you know what, I like the look of Wolves. They seem like a fun story. Maybe I'll follow that for a bit now, because, you know, I've had enough with Spurs at the minute.
They're a bit jollier as Spurs, aren't they?
Yeah, and, you know, we get that way with jobs. Like, even if you enjoy somewhere, after 4 or 5 years in the same position or whatever, you feel like a change and you feel like doing something else. Me, when I freelanced, I did it for near enough 10 years and I adored it and it was my dream job. But I got to a point we talked about where I just kind of felt like, I've done this now, I want to try something else. I mean, my livelihood was writing about sport and TV and whatever all day, but I wanted to tie myself at something else. And I think a lot of those players had got to the same point. And not just with Pochettino, but I think it's just as humans. And, you know, Eriksen wanted to move to a different country, and he's at the age where he still had enough to do something else. I think, you know, Vertonghen's probably in a similar enough position. And, you know, I think we did Trippier a bit dirty because he had such a shit season and was playing on injury. But I think we maximised the amount of money we could get out of him as an asset. But again, we kind of... There's just so many intangible things on top of it that just all came to a head at once. And we didn't do it gradually. We had those 2 straight years where we didn't sign anyone and we didn't do anything. There was no overhaul. And we laugh at clubs like Chelsea and what have you, who stockpile talent and, you know, don't really have many emotional connections with players. Maybe they do, actually. I'm not a Chelsea fan. I don't know what the fuck they think about the players, to be honest. But, you know, from the outside looking in, they just appear to have turnover for turnover's sake. But there's a balance to be struck between the two that, you know, annoyingly enough, Liverpool seem to have hit, that within a certain window, you've got to try and... Sorry, I just had somebody come in the room. Just wait a second. You've got to try and finish the project within a timescale that it's sort of that it's got a sell by date on it. There's got to be an ending point and a finish line there. It's not something that can go on forever.
No, it's funny because, like, when you touch on there with the bull stuff, you know, my sort of knee-jerk reaction of watching, I've never really been a basketball fan. Obviously, everyone knows who Michael Jordan is. And I just like sports documentaries. I like sporting stories. And I know ESPN always produce very good, you know, very good films. And so I thought, I'll give this a watch because it's sort of, you know, it seems to be one of Netflix's current flagship things and it's going to be decent. And lo and behold, it actually is. And I had this sort of it's funny to me that Pochettino is watching it as well. It's not funny. I mean, it's completely on point that he would be. And watching the first few episodes, you know, I couldn't help but like, it's not really like a bitterness. It's not even like a bittersweet feeling. It's like, it's a sort of delusion in a way of just this, I don't know, this big sort of mesh of emotions that, like we're talking about right now, that I feel about with Spurs. It's like watching this kind of like this sporting story of a franchise, of a team that was sort of seen as whatever, perennial bottlers, go on and have all these pieces, having like an almost like psychopathic figurehead in somebody like Jordan, at least in a sporting sense, with like this kind of, you know, new age, fairly middle of the road as a player, but sort of new age coach with new age ideas, be it both on the court and also off it, you know, with his sort of like hippie mantras about energy and karma and all this type of thing, mm-hmm. building this team that was so like uniquely put together, all these sort of different functioning pieces. I couldn't help but separate myself from like that and 15-16 Spurs, 16-17 Spurs. And then just thinking like, we're going to be looking back in like a decade's time, and I can't see the sort of the feeling that I have now of like, fuck, we fucked, like we fucked it, you know, just that bit of just like, that should have, like, it really should have been us that we look back in like 10 years time, just seeing like after 16-17, were it not for Wembley or for all these other things, that was the year that Spurs went on to actually win their first league title or something, or this Champions League, just something there that was just a kind of that point, that summit that the Pochettino project got to. And I know the whole MO of the club is the echo of glory. And I mean, we've got that in abundance from the Pochettino era completely. But I just think that feeling, and I think that's what's so hard. It's like, it's kind of like it's falling down a mountain and trying to grip onto the rope, right, and feeling it going through your fingers. It's just like, now as we're seeing it, we're seeing Kane's injuries mounting up and him starting to, as to coin an old Raj Baines phrase, make kissy faces to the big clubs out there now, trying to get out there. Alderweireld, Vertonghen, we're sort of seeing their stars fading now. Obviously, Rose and Walker have gone. No more Dembele, no more Wanyama. Okay, there's green shoots here and there, but we're looking at kind of at least another 5, if not 10 years before we're back in the fold.
Oh, yeah, this sport at the highest level is so cyclical. And I think there's a lot we can learn from American sports in that sense, because I think because of the franchise nature and the drafting nature of that, they're a lot more accepting that when you have a high, the immediate aftermath of a high is fucking crushing defeat and lows, because that's just the way it goes, and that's kind of the natural pattern of it. The only other parallel I've just thought of while you were talking there is Jerry Krause and Daniel Levy are very similar as well, because
these
non-playing, non-sporting executives who have essentially orchestrated something brilliant and deserve credit for that are hated because they put the organisation ahead of sport, and they kind of...
Well, in some ways, it's that final little throw of it where they just... And I know it's that sort of proper football manism, but they just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, that just, and you can just see it is revealed.
It's almost like there's too much pride.
Yeah.
To kind of accept that.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they do get it, but they don't want to accept it. I think that's the way I would phrase it. Because in order to accept it, I think they would have to swallow their pride 25% more than they are willing to. Because in accepting it, they would essentially be downplaying their role in it slightly. And I think it's almost their own sort of...
Yeah.
Their own... stubbornness kind of leads them to think, I've done it once and I've helped my part in this in some way, and I'm not getting the credit for my part that I some way sort of deserve. And, you know, almost the way that Kraus got rid of Phil Jackson and the same way that Levy felt he needed to get rid of Pochettino. Yeah. I don't think there's the bad blood between those two that there is between, you know, Kraus and Jackson. But there is almost that want for them to be the ones that are seen to, you know, be the secret figurehead behind the success in a way that they are and they aren't. It's really hard to quantify how much they put into that, just because they're not, at the end of the day, on the spot, they're not the ones playing. They do have a big role, but, you know, he's not stopping goals and he's not scoring them. But in a similar way, I think on the Mourinho thing, I think you touched on really well as well, but that was a status signing. I think you're right that, you know, the lads weren't ready to jump in straight away with a brand new project. I think we needed a palate cleanser, and there's probably no greater palate cleanser in football. If you can hire a palate cleanser and possibly pick up a cup or two in the process and reinstill a winning mentality, and at the same time be seen to be associated with somebody who is only associated with success and the very biggest teams in world football, then I think that just underlines where the club want to be seen with the stadium, with the players we've got, with the valuation of the club we now have, and especially with the manager. We are kind of where we're walking the walk now without talking the talk to fucking... So we really are dads now, aren't we? But... yeah. It was a stunt. It was not a PR stunt, but it was more of a sort of a status stunt. Just kind of like, okay, we've lost Pochettino. You thought that's the best we could do, and we would have to go and now hire Eddie Howe or something like that, because that's what Spurs traditionally would do. But
yeah,
no, we've gone and got the, you know, Guardiola aside, the biggest player left in the game to come and manage us. If you ask anybody in world football who the biggest and most successful managers in modern day football are, those two are the two that are going to come to mind before anyone else. Obviously Ferguson first, but he's retired. So it's, you know, I think that's it. And I think I think when we talked about this privately at the time, I think there's some belief that we've got Mourinho at a good time, because it's post Manchester United and he's almost got that all out of his system. I think a lot of his mystique and his aura to a certain extent has been taken away from him. And I think that charisma and you know, his sort of more clandestine approach has kind of been robbed of him. And there was a lot of talk of how he's gone away and, you know, the coaching staff he's got have reinvigorated him, and he's adapted his approach some way. This is obviously his agent doing as much spin as possible. He's adapted his approach to try and be a more modern thinking manager, but at the end of the day, he needs to prove himself, and so do the club. So I think the motivations of both parties kind of fit, and it's a relationship of convenience more than sort of anything else. But I think it's kind of the best fit for the time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff at the moment, like, you know, it's a battle that will rage on, and we'll only see kind of who was right, really, in a few years' time, potentially, anyway. But this whole kind of, I kind of get the idea that he's yesterday's man to a degree, but I do think there is, at the moment, there's a real propensity to overstate that. And I mean this mostly in the, like, footballing press for the most part. There is a kind of, and I don't buy for a second this whole, oh, it's Stockholm syndrome, he's got you now. No, I can exercise independent thought. Like, Mourinho isn't that much of a fucking genius that he can convince me that, you know, I think he's actually good, even though I've disliked him for most of his career. I just don't, with my own eyes, what I've seen him do under the circumstances hasn't been as bad as people have made out at all. I think people have been very, very eager to jump on anything like that. The Liverpool game at home.
Oh, it's a pantomime played, villain, isn't it?
Oh, mate, but Liverpool were, like, you know, for want of a better word, they were absolutely bombastic at the time. Like, they were smashing people to pieces, left, right and centre. And, like, we were genuinely going into that game thinking, fuck me, like, not only have they beaten us in the Champions League final, they're going to come to our ground now and beat us, like, 5-6-0 in front of the country and really rub it in, and we'll be hearing over Champions of Europe, you'll never sing that, echoing around White Hart Lane. But actually, we gave them a fucking good game under the circumstances and nearly drew with them. If it wasn't for, like, you know, a rusty Lo Celso, sounds like some sort of sounds like when you haven't wiped your bum properly, doesn't it? But if it wasn't for a rusty Lo Celso, he would have tucked that in at the back post and it would have been 1-1 and it'd been all right. But because it wasn't, it was seen as this, why didn't Mourinho take it to Liverpool? What, like, why should he? Why should a team that kind of has, if it was as low on resource as we were at that time, take it to really the best team in Europe at that point? They probably are still the best team in Europe, you know? I'm not going to accept this whole kind of idea that this is Project Doom, that this is all going to go down the shithole, like, because really it probably won't. I can quite easily see Spurs winning an FA Cup or something like that next season, maybe the Europa League if we get into it. I'm not quite as fanciful about us making a fist of the league. I've seen a few people say, oh, if we don't have Europe and we've only got the league to concentrate on, I honestly think we're miles off that conversation at the moment, to be honest. Like, yeah. To me, we're back in that place of, like, focus on the cups and getting into the top four again. Yeah. It's kind of building up to that point again. But
you kind of got to have that, you know, as your basis before you think of anything else.
Yeah. You know, and I think we've fallen as far as Arsenal did? No, but at the same time, we didn't hit the heights that Arsenal did either. So, you know, we can only lord it over them so much, as much as I, you know, will do where I can. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see it as, and this is why I kind of, you know, when we were talking about at the start, the reasons why we feel a bit less connected to Spurs, I genuinely don't see this as some kind of spoiled, entitled fan thing of, like, well, we're not playing well and we sacked the manager I really like, so I'm not going to support us until we're doing well again. I just think there's just so many spinning plates at the moment that it's hard to keep them all going.
Yeah.
I think even the momentum will be back.
Even if we had miraculously improved and started playing brilliantly after Poch had gone, I don't think we would all suddenly be back at that same level of enthusiasm. I think it was just sort of...
No, because I'd be annoyed with the players. I'd be thinking, well, why couldn't you have done this with him?
Yeah.
You know?
It is a really odd position to be in. And I think it is just a natural progression of emotions. I think you need a period of mourning before you can sort of, you know, that five-step process or whatever it is, you kind of need a rebound and stuff before you can kind of go again with somebody you can believe in and psych yourself up for that disappointment again, because I think that's it. You're kind of protecting yourself, really, especially with a club like ours, from just giving so much to them. There was just so much invested in that run and that season, and not just that season, I think it was the build-up to it as well. Everything was so so fairy tale in a sense. It was the fact that
it was it was lemons, wasn't it? It was Universal Energy. It was all of that stuff.
After Sherwood, he rebuilt us with our own players, our own academy. You know, the players that came through were the ones that were supposed to come through, and you know, Mason and Bentaleb and Townsend and all those sort of people that we rebuilt the club on, and then we invested slightly and became better because we, you know, we made smart signings. We got Alderweireld, and you know, Rose and Walker became the best fullbacks in the country. Harry Kane arguably the best striker in the world. You know, Eriksen, who'd been bought under shit circumstances, had gone up. Dele Alli for five million had become, you know, world class overnight. Everything had sort of worked. You know, Moussa Dembélé, who you'd famously wanted to kick out of the club numerous times and tear up his contract, genuinely and miraculously has become a player. I don't think there's a Spurs player I've missed as much as him, not just in terms of what he brings to our team, and fuck me, could we do with a prime Moussa Dembélé, but just his whole aura and personality and everything. There's, it took us a long time to understand what he was, but he was everything. There's, not even to the point where, you know, Danny Rose, when he had his infamous Instagram Live or whatever the other night, and where he was saying that he didn't want to play again, and, you know, why aren't we caring more about dead people, which, you know, he may have said it in a very straightforward Yorkshire sense, but there's nothing wrong with what he said, in my opinion. Oh. He even took time out to go, look, you can ask me how good Moussa Dembélé was, but I can't fucking put it into words. He was just the best. And there's just
it's mad, isn't it? How many actual like players say that to Dembélé?
Not a single one of them pick anybody else. If they're all given a choice,
it's mad, isn't it? Because he was great, but I don't look at him in terms of like the pantheon of Spurs player. Maybe I should, but I'm just being honest. You know, I don't look at him as in that pantheon of Modric, Bale, Kane.
I think
King,
we probably should,
you know?
Because I think this is one thing that the only thing that I ever look back on them saying with any sort of you know, belief that they had an insight and a knowledge that was anyway worthwhile. But Les Ferdinand, when he was there at the same time as Tim Sherwood, came out and said, oh, this lad should be playing for Barcelona and Real Madrid. He's that good. Like the way we're trying to motivate him, which is obviously why they were so shit at what they were doing, was like, oh, if you pull your socks up, we can sell you to like one of the biggest clubs in the world. Look how good you are.
Yeah.
But that's how good he is. Like, even if them fucking idiots can see it, like, it took us long enough to play him in the right position and understand what he brought, and Pochettino to actually unlock that. And it was years too late, and sort of his body had started to abandon him, which is, you know, yeah, the way it goes when you play for Spurs. But it's sort of, yeah, there's all sorts of things that just kind of, the fact that he wasn't there for a Champions League final, he'd gone to China before, and I think that regret, had we just let him.
Oh, God, did you see his Instagram post before the Champions League final?
He was obviously,
as well.
I think he was good, because he would have loved that experience with the boys.
Yeah, come on, man. What has he said? Something like, nobody deserves this more than you guys. So I feel a bit fucking choked up, mate, just talking about it, to be honest. But
we had such a good, you know, such a good core, and I think they all built into it, and there was a family atmosphere there, and I think that's kind of,
yeah,
it's kind of lost. We are now at a point where we are just a football team, and it's going to need somebody to sort of build that back in, I think. I think some of the younger lads.
Ironically, we feel a bit post Ferguson Man United now. You know, that's kind of where I see us as at now. A sort of,
it's an imperfect,
you know, like
parallel, but I understand what you see.
Well, yeah, a mismatch of sort of good players, like really good players, but there's no real clear identity to them, which seems strange because a lot of them are still kind of the tail end of the Pochettino era.
But I think that's just a sign of how poorly we invested and the lack of forethought. Yeah. And I think that's the most disappointing thing. As a club, the one thing, especially Levy, to give him his credit, he always had forethought. And that's one thing that he was brilliant at, was road mapping the club for future success and safeguarding that success. You know, even to the contract situations we've got ourselves in now isn't Tottenham. When we were doing the best on the field, we were doing the best off the field. We were re-signing these players to five-year deals every year, 18 months, safeguarding their value and their sort of their commitment to the club. And, the, you know, those famous meme pictures of Pochettino in the same post sat next to him. It was there for a reason. Mm. We were incentivizing their success to stay at the club. And we just kind of run out of that for the fact that we've got Vertonghen in his last year, Eriksen was in his last year, all that sort of shit. But, you know, Alderweireld was almost gone for a free. And we had that stupid clause in his contract that meant we could have lost him for pennies last summer. And Christ only knows why nobody triggered that. It was just, you know, it's just kind of the signings that we should have been making and picking up, like the cheap ones, even the 5 million Ali signings that we didn't do. We've obviously we've bought Sessegnon and Ndombele and stuff like that. And we and there is an element of that that's trying to come through, Lo Celso and everything, but it's not enough of it. We just didn't do enough of that, and that's what's caught up with us. We just
I do think Sessegnon's going to be class. I like the fact he's kind of not really smashed it at first. It's almost a bit Bale-esque. Yeah. You know how Bale sort of came in and was all right and people are a bit like, meh, you know, he seems like an all right young player. And then suddenly, after 2-3 years at the club, I think, yeah, about that time, yeah, wasn't it, he exploded. And I kind of hold quiet hope that Sessegnon will be similar to that. Lo Celso looks unbelievable. Yeah. And Ndombele, Christ knows.
If he stopped eating like he was on Rule the Roost, then we'd be all right.
I like that, you know, we're seeing a sort of a few green shoots of, like, you know, Tanganga. Yeah. We've got that other lad, like, who sounds like a Dickens character. And he's called, like, Fagan Walcott or something like that, isn't he? Who's like, coming through. It's you know, Oliver Skip, I'm not as sure on, but
you know what, Oliver Skip's one of those almost Dembele like players where everyone, whoever's played with him and stuff, who they all say amazing things. Did you ever read that quote about when he played in that under 20s or under 21s game against the Dutch were complaining. Apparently the Dutch lads, all the young Dutch lads came in and went, oh, that Skip in the middle is a fucking pain in the ass. He plays like Frankie de Jong, we can't get the ball off him, he's ran the entire game. And I mean, that's, you know, he's not Frankie de Jong by any stretch of the imagination, but the fact that they were...
Looks a bit like
saying
him.
That, yeah. But the fact that they were even saying that is kind of, you know, encouraging. And I think, you know, it's just about nurturing the talent, because they're only going to be as good as we allow them to be.
Yeah, and I it's funny, isn't it? Because I think as well, like, most of the time when we're seeing Skip, he's getting chucked into a midfield without any sort of like real physical presence alongside him or anything like that. So he's you know, and it's a victim of circumstance. And it's also kind of what happens with young players, right? They get chucked in as and when they get an opportunity to, and it's seldom going to be perfect unless they're a particularly special talent. And that's not to say he's not, but in a position like he occupies, it is going to be a case of, like, get out there and let's see what you can do, kind of, you know. It's that sort of old Harry Redknapp adage, isn't it? Just get out there and fucking run around a bit, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think he does fine. It's just hard to know quite how good he is from what we've seen at a first team level. But, you know, I still think there's enough green shoots at Spurs to suggest that, you know, it's not going to be a case of us returning back to being a no-mark
team. I don't
think
we're fully derailed.
I don't either. And I think they might finish above it. Like, if whatever happens with Project Restart, I think Arsenal probably annoyingly will finish above us this season, perhaps. Although, in saying that, when we go back to it, we're going to have a potentially fully fit team again. So we might have a nice end to the season. And
sort of...
Ultimately, I still think Arsenal are not as good as us. I still don't think they are. I still don't think there's enough there in their team. I still think, as much as people are talking about Arteta being their Pochettino or whatever, I don't think the infrastructure at the club will allow for that to happen. Mm. From everything I hear, their whole boardroom, their backroom processes are chaos. You know, there's no sense that people are pulling in the same direction.
They're a cash cow for Kroenke's American aspirations. That's all. They're a profit-making process for the things that he actually cares about in America, which is, to be honest, in a even though they are who they are, it's a sad thing that that's what they've become. I mean, I don't really care, but
no.
It's sad that a club like that has become that.
Rivalry aside, class gesture, yeah. Clapping hands emojis
from a Spurs fan,
you know. You can imagine looking at it from, you know, we're having to grow up in an era when Arsenal were, for all intents and purposes, a pretty much a team built off of the back of Wenger. You know, they were an all right team and they were very good, but they weren't doped in the way that Chelsea were or anything like that. And they built one of the best sides in Premier League history, in English footballing history. And to see them now become just, like you say, this weird thing, just like a wank sock. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, it's sort of what they are, just a wank sock on the fucking floor of the Premier League bedroom. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, what are they? That feels like a good place to bring this pod to an end, mate. I don't know about you.
I've got a few questions for you, if you don't mind me driving for a little while.
Oh, go on, then.
Not just questions for you, but kind of just talking points. Things I've picked up in conversation that I fancied discussing with you. Because, to be honest, Jack, I don't know the next time we're going to do this, so we may as well talk about it now. The future of the club, do you think we're going to get to a point where I'm kind of thinking about, you know, Newcastle being bought by Khashoggi's killers and stuff like that. Just to take it back and remind people that my high horse is still firmly beside me.
We'll get Taylor and Bestie
think. They'll be fucking beside themselves.
Man City lad treatment.
Yeah.
Rob Pollard, that's the one. That's the one I'm thinking of.
You know, when Enoch come to sell, what do you think they're going to sell, and where do you think we're going to end up? Because the way the club's shaping up, sort of the Amazon documentary, the NFL stuff, all that sort of unsavoury nonsense, I almost think we're destined to be an American-owned club at some point. That's the way we're being moulded. And, you know, maybe it'll be the world's first trillionaire, Jeff Bezos, that buys us, and we're fucking Amazon United or whatever. But
that's the one it looks like, right? It kind of sounds like there's a lot of to and fro between the club and Amazon. And, you know, I can't imagine they're on the phone to Jeff Bezos. So, like, you know, these companies are structured in such a way that there's so many levels before you reach the top of the mountain, right? But I can imagine on one level, in that maybe the sport washing department, they see Spurs as a very viable option, because it's going to take somebody massive. The club now is worth a lot of money, but, you know, I think the thing we've always, I don't think anybody's ever really lost sight of, but perhaps has become less pointed as the years have rolled on, because they've been there for so long. But I still think maybe ultimately we need to remember that Enoch
is an investment,
company. They're an investment company. They're a sports investment company. Mm. And, you know, they bought us. I think they owned Rangers as well once upon a time.
They had some money in Rangers.
Maybe somebody like, Grasshoppers Zurich and a few of these other clubs. And
there was one, wasn't it one of the Prague clubs? Because didn't we have to waive conflict when we played them in the UEFA Cup or something like that?
Yeah, there was something UEFA were trying to, you know, saying that, like, one of the clubs would have to give the other a bye, or there was something like that, wasn't there? I can't remember, but this is like maybe even pre-Yol era, wasn't it? But
I think it was the Yol era when we first got into UEFA Cup.
But maybe. Yeah, but I do think Spurs will be sold. I think that's the reason why we built the stadium. I don't think that, you know, the appetite was there to build a stadium because we necessarily thought that we had a fan base that would facilitate the filling of a 60,000 seat stadium week in, week out. And I'm, you know, I think this is one of the ways in which Enoch probably shoot themselves in the foot sometimes, is that they, I think they adopt and have adopted with the stadium this kind of build it and they will come type mentality. Mm-hmm. But I think they're in for a kind of rude awakening these next few years if things on the pitch do take a bit of a downturn, that the sport is still very important. You know, you can have your flashy kind of promos, you can have a nice big stadium, you can have a kind of figurehead in a player like Harry Kane, but ultimately the sport is important. And I can imagine, just you pick up from kind of the breadcrumbs that you've heard out of the sort of various interviews with Pochettino and such, that this is the point he was very much slamming his head into a wall about with kind of Daniel Levy, and such, as much as he respected him and as much as he kind of was on board and understanding that football is a business now and mm-hmm. it's not just about what happens on the pitch. I do sometimes feel that the biggest criticism I can make of Levy is that I do think all too often, perhaps, he doesn't allow himself to acknowledge how big a part the romanticism of sport itself does play a part in this.
There's the fact that he almost seemed shocked as well when so many people called him out on the furlough stuff as well. There's still sometimes that weird disconnect from him that I thought he would have, for a man as clearly as intelligent as he is, there just seems to be that disconnect from him sometimes, and I never fully
understand. I think it's a lack of emotional intelligence, right? Perhaps.
Possibly. I don't know.
To psychoanalyze a man who I literally have seen a few photographs of and read some scathing articles of, but you know, it's,
you know, you know, with the Bezos thing, I think, you know, although to our knowledge he's never killed anybody, he's obviously the figurehead of rampant capitalism, if there ever was one. But the worst thing he's ever probably done is get a divorce, cheat on his wife. I'm not sure, but it's still one of those things where it will be weird to be owned in that way, and I'm really not looking forward, if it does happen, because it is just conjecture at the minute, the inevitable headlines about Spurs failing to deliver is, you know, shite. But
the funny thing is that I was thinking about this the other day with our Champions League run. So like BT Sport, they put on the other night, on Sunday night, they put out like four of our greatest European nights in the Champions League, and it was Inter at home, mm-hmm. AC away, Ajax, and Real Madrid at Wembley, right, as well. And I know people listening to this who support whoever, Dog and Duck FC, will say, oh, listen to a Spurs fan making out like they, you know, did this the right way. But in the context of that level, that tier of football, we absolutely did. And I won't have that taken away from us by any kind of mental gymnastics or anything. You know, if you can honestly look at Tottenham in context with Real Madrid, in context with Manchester City, Chelsea, even the Italian clubs, to be honest, who did this all over the 90s, what we have achieved in the short time we've been in the Champions League is nothing short of remarkable. And I can say that, like, and it fills me with like a swelling sense of pride that even though we didn't win the Champions League, I can see us having done that, because I kind of feel that from this point onward, with the new stadium, with a new owner, be it Bezos or whatever other faceless, weird investment or insurance or oil-backed company comes in and takes us over.
Just as long as they're not, you know, an awful human right record or something, then. But,
yeah, I mean, you know, I hate to even under those sort of instances, I'm not going to pretend that, like, if Spurs went on, you know, if in 10 years' time this happens, we get taken over and we just become a financially dope club and we win the Champions League, you'll obviously have a big piss up and you'll enjoy it. And, you know, touch wood, we'll both have kids at that time that we can share that sort of memory with, and it'll be about that. It'll be about the day out, and it'll be about enjoying it. But I can quite comfortably say, I think even now, that it will, as we've always said, and I will maintain that it won't have felt the same as if we did it under Pochettino. Oh, no. And I think that's what adds the raw. I think, because I wrote a little thing just after it when I was trying to sort of get my head around it all. It's sort of with the ushering in of this new Spurs, to me, it almost just feels that, like, at some point or another, success is inevitable now. Like, at some point, I feel that Spurs are probably in the next 20, 15, 10, whatever years, probably going to win the Champions League. Not Champions League, sorry, the Premier League at least.
Yeah.
And that will be more down to the fact that we have built a big stadium and bought loads of big players, mm-hmm. as opposed to seeing these projects, see the kind of like us working through the kind of motions of Yol, of Redknapp, of then Pochettino out the end of it, of seeing these three, you know, whatever we want to say about Redknapp, it was a great forward leap for the club as well. And he did do a lot for us in many respects. And I think those three in particular are like signposts of the general progression at Spurs, and really Pochettino's era should have been the one that was where it finally bared fruit, and it didn't. And now we're just going to see it happen in that instance of, well, you did it in the way that Man City did it, and you did it in the way that Chelsea did it. And it's just like,
people often use books.
I think that's where I rest on it.
I think people often use books as a metaphor for passing the time, and they talk about the end of a chapter or the end of a, you know, page or something like that. And I think that whole, even from back to like Hoddle to Santini, maybe it starts with Santini, I'm not sure, but if that's where this story starts, I think it ends with Pochettino. I don't think that's the end of a chapter. I think that's the closing of a book. And I think whatever happens post Pochettino, it's its own narrative and its own story. I don't think that's connected to what came before it anymore. I think that is
the last. The last thread of it for me, honestly, rests on the shoulders of Harry Kane.
Yeah,
that is like that's the last thread of it. Like the last dying embers of like, if he doesn't get a move because of injuries or whatever, or his price is too expensive, and we see that kind of like a jaded 29, 30-year-old Harry Kane think, fuck it, let's go for it, and manages to win us like a Premier League, that one last time, that will be that last little kind of like, you know, the kind of rose through the concrete kind of thing, you know?
But even then, it'll, to me, that almost feels like a, it almost feels bigger than him. Like that would be the same protagonist in a different story. But and I get what you're saying.
There is
the one thread that remains, really, because the majority of it will have gone soon enough.
Of course,
but it's.
I think he's going to go soon enough, though. To be honest, mate, annoyingly, but
we'll see. It won't be this summer because nobody's got the money for him. But I was going to say earlier, actually, I think, weirdly, in the most perverse sense possible, I don't want to try and draw positives out of what's happening on a word
stage.
No,
again, I think we all know the context. So,
but this is going to do wonders for his ankle. The fact that he doesn't have to play for England this summer and he's had time to actually recover and not rush himself back for something for once. He can actually sit, play with his kids, try and play golf and do whatever else, go to sheesh every night of the week and actually rest.
Good lad with that Leighton Orient thing. At the start of this whole COVID thing, I was a bit annoyed of him as well, like considering, you know, England captain. Not the fact he would dare to say he might want to leave Spurs if they don't match his ambition, as it were, but to me it rankled with me a bit that, you know, seeing Jordan Henderson or Troy Deeney or whoever else sort of seemingly trying to rally people behind a cause for good. The only thing I'd heard out of Harry Kane was him saying that he might want to leave Spurs if it don't match his ambition. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of me thinking, like, come on, lad. But you know what? Actually, watching the Jordan documentary, it's quite funny when he was sort of called out for being an Uncle Tom or what have
Republicans
you.
Republicans buy sneakers too. Not,
But how his whole point was like, you know, why are you coming to a basketball player for like for your politics kind of thing? And I think when you watch, it does feel like a bit of an easy get out of jail free card. But I just think part of the mentality of these, if from watching The Last Dance, seeing how Jordan was wired, and sort of what we see of Kane, and I'm not drawing an equivalency between. Purely only in their kind of mentality. I don't think Kane has the same natural ability or top end ability that someone like Jordan had in his respective field, mm-hmm. but that sort of that mentality that had that drive to win, you can't really imagine they really focus on much else other than getting a ball in a net.
No.
Than like normal people do. And I think it's always like, I try and step away from that like feeling of disappointment with sports stars. Sometimes, you know, not in these completely like horrendous cases of like, you know, Danny Simpson having to be literally pulled off of his girlfriend as he's throttling her, you know, on the floor by the police. And that's not libelous. That's fact. At least I believe so. You know, you can feel disappointment in that, or if, you know, John Terry's indiscretions in many a different field. But, you know, when it's kind of like, why hasn't a player had an opinion on Brexit or something? It's like, probably because he knows that whatever he says is going to get attacked. And also, he probably concedes that he doesn't know enough about it. And also, really doesn't give that much of a
shit.
It's
not his job.
Because it doesn't affect him. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but I'm talking to myself here in the respect that it was nice anyway, at least to see Harry Kane doing that.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know, if anyone's lived in a cave, he's personally sponsoring Leighton Orient's shirts.
And giving them up for three different charities, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, again, if people say it's a cynical PR thing, who gives a fuck? Every single footballer on the, you know, in the Premier League could be doing a similar cynical PR thing, but they're not, you know. So,
but it's the fact that it's whatever. A small club that will be struggling in this time, and they're not going to be missing out on sponsorship money, and they're actually going to be doing some good with what's on the front of the shirt and all that business. It's just a nice thing. You can be cynical about it as much as you want, but sometimes nice things are just nice things, and you can try and pick holes in whatever you want to pick holes in, but you've got to kind of try and take some things at face value sometimes, otherwise you're never going to enjoy or appreciate anything.
Agreed, mate.
I was going to say, just to finally touch on that new ownership thread that I was tugging at, in that interview, Pochettino did say he wanted to come back to the club at some point, and I can see that being the first act of a new ownership for their own good press.
If the stars align.
For their own good press,
it wouldn't,
bringing him back
because
he would have the funds. It would be a clean break from what he was at before, similar to how Levy hired Hoddle because he knew that everyone would love the fact that a club legend had come back. Not similar, but I'm going to say it anyway because it makes me laugh. Similar to how Mike Ashley rehired Kevin Keegan at Newcastle. you know what I mean, though? It's kind of that sort of giving the fans what they want, making them feel like you understand sort of a thing. I can see that.
I think there's definitely the pieces are there. Yeah, I think the pieces are there, but the stars would have to align.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we don't know where we'll be. We don't know where he'll be. But it's nice to feel like it could happen maybe one day, and he could come back and draw a line under it, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah, it would be nice.
All right, well, should we call it there? No, I think that's it. I think I should probably actually do some work now, mate.
Have you watched any telly or anything?
Last Dance, really.
Right.
Yeah. If you have, I watch Normal People as well.
Is that the one about people shagging? I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, loads of shagging, and it's you know, it's easy to watch.
Mm.
Well, it's not easy to watch in some respects. It's actually it's quite depressing in many ways. But it's, you know, it's kind of BBC Three, 20-minute episodes. It's definitely captivating. It's following a relationship down the years, so it'll be up your street. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I'll have a deke. There's so many things there's so many things I've missed out on that I haven't watched just because I had other more important things to be getting on with that I no longer have to be getting on with. So I haven't been catching up.
The first two series of Ozark were all right, yeah. But the third series that's just come out now is pretty brilliant. It's really quite good.
But these are sort of things I would have watched at the time, you know, previously, even that. And like, I've not seen a second of Better Call Saul, and people are going on about how that's now comparable in quality to Breaking Bad. And I've still not got around to even, you know, scratching the surface with stuff like that. I'm now trying to finish things that I previously hadn't finished.
The funny thing with Better Call Saul is that, you know how at first the kind of showrunners were completely like, look, it's set in all time before Breaking Bad, but it's not a Breaking Bad prequel as such. Yeah. It's just kind of backstory.
They're lent into it now,
like,
fully.
They've fully given that up. it is, make no mistake, it is a Breaking Bad prequel now. Okay. Like, complete. The last couple of, so I think we're on season 5 now.
Yeah.
And I would say that there's been a complete tonal shift in the past two seasons that has seen it like fully become a Breaking Bad prequel. Sick. Preview, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's mad. It's mad. Some of the stories that they fleshed out from throwaway lines in Breaking Bad is absolutely brilliant. You know, there's all these like mind blown type snips that have been shared from Breaking Bad where somebody said something in a kind of throwaway fashion,
yeah.
But you're watching like a full on kind of narrative fleshed out around it in Better Call Saul now, which is,
that sounds good.
It's decent, mate. I'm not going to go into it too much, but definitely, yeah, pick up the reins on that again.
I will. I'll try and find some time. It doesn't look like we're getting out of this anytime soon, so who knows, we might even make a fucking second podcast.
Well, we might do. Yeah, let's maybe, when's the Champions League final due? We could, why don't we do a watch?
June 1st.
A watch along for 20 seconds.
It was less than 20 seconds, wasn't it? It still wasn't a fucking on ball.
It wasn't. It fucking, Another day, mate.
Yeah, this VAR thing's probably another contributing factor to why we now hate football.
Yeah, fair. I'm not going to do all the sign off of, you know, followers and all that shit because you don't need to anymore.
We just don't care.
Enjoy it. Yeah. If you did, yeah. If you don't, fuck off.
Yeah. See you later, hopefully. Enjoy your lives. Stay safe. That's what everyone says now, isn't it?
Sounds
like a weird sexual health kind of note to end it on, but wash your hands.
Like in one of those cartoons you'd watch in secondary school when like Captain Condom would come in, like, you know what I mean? Like a Johnny in a cape sort of thing.
You've never described yourself better.
Captain Condom.
Just remember to inject yourselves with Dettol and try and make sure the sun goes inside you, and we'll get through this together.
I love you back. Fuck Donald Trump. Fuck Donald Trump. Fuck Donald Trump. Fuck Donald Trump. I like white folks, but I don't like you. All the niggas in the hood wanna fight you. Surprise Al Chapo ain't tried to snipe you. Surprise the Nation of Islam ain't tried to find you. Heavy rally out in LA, we gon' fuck it up. All mother Rodney King riot, we don't give a fuck. I'm about to turn Black Panther. Don't let Donald Trump win
that nigga
cancer. He's too rich. He ain't got the answers. He can't make decisions for this country. He gone crash us. No, we can't be a slave for him. He got me appreciating Obama way more. Subscribe and I love you back.
You know that guy ain't shit.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.